Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Later on, we'll hear from the Ireland rugby coach Joe Schmidt ahead of the Guinness Series opener against Canada at Aviva Stadium. We'll chat to World Rugby CEO Brett Gosper and also to England World Cup winner Maggie Alafonsi. But first, a chance to relive a historic day for Irish rugby in Soldier Field, Chicago.
Murray gets there quickly again, playing advantage as Payne takes it in. And offloading, Carney gets close. Need the quick ball. Having a go on the blind sides. Try given.
Oh, Ireland. They have come to play big time. Lovely ball here from Sexton.
Looking dangerous again. The men in green. Murray up the centre. Connor Murray. Try number three.
No, oh, what a snipe from Connor Murray. Just showed the little dummy, and then the acceleration was too much for the All Blacks.
The back line are not looking involved at this stage. Best holding in the back. Still upright. Still going. Now dragged down by Squire. Murray works it away. Sexton gets it away. Zebo scores. Less than 5 minutes. Here's Heaslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Henshaw. Robbie Henshaw scores it.
Well, I just wonder whether or not the All Blacks were expecting the same. Ireland to go for the pushover to scrum them. They didn't.
The match referee, Matthew Rainall, has blown for a penalty for Ireland on the halfway line, and this could very well be the final action of the game as Joey Carberry got us this one, kicks it into touch on the far side of the pitch, and the referee has blown the full-time whistle. Ireland have created history at Soldier Field. They have absolutely demolished New Zealand by 40 points to 29 in a tri-fest of a game. Ireland leading at half-time by 25 points to 8 after scoring 3 tries in the opening half of the match. Ireland won a 4th try 6 minutes into the second half. Simon Zebo with the score there, but TJ Perenara with a try for New Zealand after 52, converted by Bowden Barrett. It was Ireland by 30 points to 15, and then 2 tries for New Zealand after 55 minutes and 64 from Ben Smith and Scott Barrett, converted by his brother Bowden. There was only 4 points between the teams with 15 minutes remaining. It was Ireland who led by 33 points to 29, but then with 8 minutes remaining, Robbie Henshaw crashed over for a try. Joey Carberry with the conversion. He's nudged it between the posts. Soldier Field has erupted. Ireland has created history here in Chicago. They have beaten New Zealand for the first time ever. Ireland by 40 points to 29.
Look, we're delighted. There was a heck of a lot of emotional energy that went into that. Some good organisation that the players committed to. And, you get a win like that after so long waiting for a win like that, after the frustrations of 3 years ago where we were so close. You know, it was fantastic. I looked up in the crowd at one stage and Paul O'Connell was pumping his fist as delighted as any man when, you know, he was so disappointed 3 years previously.
I think the pack fronted up early on. I thought the lads did really good work on the defensive line out, and Amal was going well for us today. Geez, what a day to be Irish, and you know, you're incredibly proud of the performance, and to do something that's never been done before is quite, I suppose it's overwhelming in a way. It's sitting in the dressing room there and just thinking of where we are, the amount of Irish there, the atmosphere, and yeah, it's incredible. It's hard to put into words, really.
There was no Irish player going to take a step back today.
No, I think we had a game plan, and we all knew what was expected of us, and I suppose Joe laid it out really well for us. And I think when you're chasing history, you know you have to go to within yourself at times when you really need to be sucking diesel. So I think all the lads fronted up really well today, and there was a great buzz out there, and my God, like, what a day.
Can I just ask you one final question, what it was like to play in front of that crowd outside there, and it seemed as if everybody kind of fed off each other?
Yeah, Jesus, when we're going around the end there and you just see, you look up and just wall of green and the noise they've created. Look, it was something else, and the stadium's absolutely incredible there as well. The atmosphere that was there and the buzz around the place, and I suppose we got a good start earlier on, was palpable. You could feel the crowd really getting behind us. And yeah, geez, thanks to everyone coming out and making the day that it is, because something else.
I'll have to go back through it a couple of times and analyse what we did do well and what we can do better, because right from the start of the week we kind of described it as a reference point, somewhere to start from, and we don't want to get ahead of ourselves at all.
Joel Schmidt and Tadhg Furlong there with the additional words after that incredible victory for Irish rugby. Before departing Chicago, I spoke to the renowned New Zealand broadcaster Tony Johnson and wondered if he was surprised at an Ireland win.
I think a lot of us thought that maybe Ireland would be a tougher prospect back in Dublin in a couple of weeks' time, that maybe they'd throw everything at it then, when you've got, you know, O'Brien back, Earls back, a couple of the guys that missed this game, and that maybe Ireland would be a little short on preparation. All Blacks have been playing together all winter. Ireland haven't had a game for quite some time. So we thought that maybe it might be the next game where Ireland would be tough. And make no mistake, I think everyone respected the chances of Ireland. Even though the All Blacks have had this fantastic run, no one's forgotten what happened last time they met. So, yeah, maybe it's caught us a little bit by surprise. But by the same token, I think, you know, it's a result that people in New Zealand absolutely respect. I mean, there's no question that the best team on the field won, and that the All Blacks have had their unbeaten run brought to a rather, well, a famous end, but you know, a fairly emphatic one.
But we shouldn't really be surprised, should we, you know, given how close recent games have been. You mentioned the Aviva Stadium, I'm even thinking back to, you know, Christchurch a couple of years before that.
The thing is, though, this All Black team has been so good at digging themselves out of holes. In fact, we started getting the feeling between World Cups that they were almost practicing getting themselves in holes so they could get themselves out of them. But this time there was no coming back. And I think it's pretty obvious that they learned the lessons of what happened last time. I thought that was they came up with a magnificent strategy for that game. And I think people in New Zealand, you know, have been asking questions about Joe Schmidt. You know, what are the chances of him coming back one day to be the All Black coach? Well, obviously, we're going to need a crowbar to get him out of Ireland now. It was beautifully set up. It was beautifully planned, beautifully executed, and it's left the All Black team with a bit of work to do.
Now, given the way the game actually went, it's not as if the All Blacks were playing terribly and Ireland were just sort of average, because, I mean, you know, in fairness, I think Steve Hansen was absolutely brilliant after the game, where he said, listen, hands up, you know, the best team actually won this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will have to look at some aspects of the play that weren't up to scratch. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't take Whitelock and Retallick out of the team and expect there to be no difference. We've prided ourselves in New Zealand on the depth of our rugby, but I think it's had a thorough examination with, you know, the injuries to Whitelock, Retallick and Romano going home. But having said that, Tui Pilota was a tremendous player. They had faith that Kano would do it. I think in hindsight they probably made a mistake there. They didn't want to throw young Barrett in there. When he came on in the second half, he made a difference, and so maybe they might have been better off starting him. And obviously they lost a couple of guys out of the midfield as well. But as I say, those are outcomes, or those are perhaps little factors. But the biggest factor in that game was the fact that Ireland played magnificently, and I think they forced the All Blacks to drop their standard. They didn't let them offload the ball. They just wrapped guys up in the tackle. They stopped the All Black continuity, which is the thing that no one else has been able to do. No one else has come within cooey of that team in the last 15 or 20 minutes of a test match in a long time now. And we thought when the All Blacks came back that would be it. They'd run over the top. But no, Ireland found a couple of brilliant plays. I think, you know, there were aspects of that All Black performance were definitely below par. But I think you have to consider the way that Ireland played didn't allow them to be as good as they have been for the last, you know, well, how many years it is now since they've been on this winning streak.
It's a hell of a 2015, is it?
Oh, man. And what about the timing of it? You know, that being here to see the end of this run at the same time we had the Chicago Cubs winning for the first time in 108 years, Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time in 111. I think, I imagine there'd probably be more people wanting to play the All Blacks here now.
Not that we're entirely overly surprised, but in terms of the way that Ireland played and some of the scores that they manufactured and the variety of their play, they did seem to ask an awful lot of questions of New Zealand that perhaps other teams weren't able to do, even this year's rugby championship.
Yeah, and I think guy that deserves a lot of the credit for that is Conor Murray. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Best player on the park, in my opinion. Other people might have. Obviously, the forwards played really well. Had to, beautifully led by Rory Best, you know, from the front. But I thought Murray, his reads. What was interesting to me was the way, you know, they held on to the ball. We've come to expect teams to maybe go two or three phases against the All Blacks and then kind of give up, kick the ball away, which it feeds the All Blacks counter-attack game. Well, that didn't happen. And when they did kick, they kicked precisely, put pressure on. The tactic, the kickoffs with Carney chasing them was brilliant. And it was the detail of it all that really got me. It was the fact, here are we thinking they'd be short on preparation. The detail of the way they kept the two wingers playing on one side of the field at the same time, shifting it, you know, one way than the other to try and create something like that. He was thinking outside the box, and his players, particularly with that masterful performance at 9 and 10, both for Ireland, I thought it was quite phenomenal.
At 33-29, I think everybody in the stadium, certainly from an Irish point of view, was rather nervous, thinking, oh no, this is going to be another one that's going to get away. But it just seemed as if, as Rory Best said during the week, you know, they went to a dark place, a place they'd never been before, and they found an extra 5%.
Yeah, and Steve Hansen's often talked about that. You know, in order to be a champion team, sometimes you have to go into those dark places and experience what they're like. And know how to get yourself out of them. And look, you know, the All Blacks had the chance and they were mounting an attack and we're thinking, here it comes. It's going to be, as the great Yogi Berra would say, deja vu all over again. But I think it was Famuina dropped the ball. A guy, normally his handling skills are very good. They threw ragged passes. And you know, we made the comment during our commentary that those were the things that they were getting right when they met at the Aviva last time, and they weren't getting them right yesterday. And I think that was because of the pressure. And for once, they couldn't find a way out of it. You know, astonishing that the number of tries that Ireland were able to create. But I still think, and Joe kind of took issue with me when I mentioned the defence being a key factor, I still think it was the defence that won the game for Ireland. Mm. Sure, score 6 tries, but even that's sometimes not enough to beat this All Black team. To restrict the All Blacks try scoring the way they did, I still think that was the key to the win.
In my mind's eye, I'm thinking of something during the course of the match. Ireland are playing right to left and there's a ball thumped up the pitch and there's a kick chase after it, and I think it's Ben Smith gathers it inside the 22 and there's an Irish player clobbers him onto the ground.
Yeah,
it was Tadhg Furlong, the front row forward.
Yeah, and what teams have tended to do against the All Blacks in recent years is just kick badly, because they run out of options, they hoof the ball downfield, but they kicked with purpose. But that was, that's symptomatic of a team with that realises that there's history there beckoning, and in order to grab it, you've got to play at maximum velocity. And I loved the attitude right from the word go of kicking for the corners, like, you know, let's build. We'll build pressure on the scoreboard, see what this team is made of. But yeah, that sort of passionate stuff. I mean, we've always expected that from Ireland. Just haven't always seen it in the last 20 minutes of a test match like we did.
And that's been the key, really, TJ, hasn't it? The fact that, you know, Ireland have gone toe-to-toe with New Zealand, along with many other teams, for maybe 60, 65 minutes. And then you look at the final scoreboard and you think, how the hell did they lose that game by 20-something points?
Look, and I think perhaps there's been a little bit of complacency, not so much with the All Blacks, maybe a little bit, but certainly in New Zealand, that no matter what sort of trouble they got themselves into, they could get themselves out of it. I think that the try that they engineered for Henshaw, it was poorly defended, no question, but by that stage, the defence had been compromised anyway because Ireland was showing great variations on attack. And that was it. That was the game right there. And, you know, that was a terrific moment for a very good player. And you know, we knew then that it was Red Rover all over.
Now, listen, the reaction back in New Zealand to this, it's probably not so bad losing to Ireland, is it? Or you know, given the fact it's the first time. I know that, speaking to Justin Marshall last night, that he was hurting a hell of a lot.
Well, first and foremost, if it was going to end, and I don't want to sound patronising here, but this is honest, I think, reflection of what people are thinking in New Zealand. If it was going to end, we'd much rather it be to Ireland than one or two other countries that I could name. And you know exactly who I'm talking about, Michael. because the Irish aren't going to rub your face in it. If we lose to Australia or England, with all due respect to those teams, we tend to get our noses rubbed in it a bit. They love beating the All Blacks, and understandably, I suppose, but, you know, different with Ireland. They're too busy celebrating their success to start giving you any grief about your failure, and that's what I love about it, and that's why it's been an amazing reaction, actually, talking to various people back in New Zealand, that it's generally, the streak had to end some stage, and probably rather to Ireland than most other nations. I think any of the Celtic nations probably would have been a popular choice.
Now, listen, you're heading off to on a tour of Europe. We're fortunate that we're going to see you again in 2 weeks, but it's Rome next week. I mean, what does Steve Hansen do team-wise? Does he, I hate using that phrase, rotate, but he gives other people a chance to create that little bit, perhaps, of freshness you've mentioned end of season. A bit of freshness maybe for the game in the Aviva Stadium.
Well, his options have suddenly been reduced because he's going to be without Moala and Crotty, that at the start of the year would have been his first choice midfield. And now he's got young Leonard Brown. He stepped him down from this game simply because as a young player, he's had an awful lot going on over the last couple of months. And so just they thought they'd freshen him up. Now, he's a very good player, but he's still only a young player. Mm. Feki Toa, I think, still a jury's out on him. But, you know, he's got to sort out his midfield. And I think he'll have to play them. There's even some talk of maybe giving Jordy Barrett, who's sort of travelling as an apprentice, giving him a shot. He was never meant to play a game, but they're going to have to do something there. I think this has probably been a timely kick in the backside, but it doesn't mean they're automatically going to come back from it. Now, suddenly, there'll be a bit of pressure on to come up with a good performance against Italy, who are notorious for trying to stop your play. Mm. They're not trying to win the game. Hopefully, they'll be a bit more positive than they've been in the past. And then back to the Aviva and in running into a stronger Ireland team, now absolutely pumped up with self-belief. They know that they've got the tactical game to stop the All Blacks doing what they do, but also, you know, where they can be breached, and certainly around the way they breached around the fringes, you know, in Chicago was, you know, will have caused some real concern. You know, the coaching staff are going to have to address that. So suddenly, a tour that I don't know, people I think just were expecting maybe that this streak would carry on a little bit longer. Suddenly there's a whole lot of intrigue that just simply wasn't there before they ran out onto Soldier Field on that glorious sunny afternoon in Chicago. So, you know, it adds a whole lot of extra interest. But just because they got beaten, just because they got a kick in the pants, doesn't mean they're going to, you know, you can't take it for granted anymore that they're going to bounce back and beat Ireland next time. I think it's going to be a heck of a struggle.
When you think of the whole concept of Soldier Field outside, 61,500 people, whatever the capacity was, a home game for both teams, but principally for the team in green. I mean, it was just a phenomenal occasion, phenomenal city at the end of what has been an absolutely incredible week.
It's funny, I said, excuse me, during our pre-match build-up, I said, you know, Chicago's been an ocean of blue this week, but in the last 24 hours, suddenly there's this river of green has flowed into it. And the atmosphere was amazing. They're great fans, and that's the other thing. You know, the New Zealanders that I spoke to really enjoyed being amongst the Irish fans. It's a beautiful thing about this game of ours that our fans can sit side by side and on an occasion like that and enjoy it together. And then, yeah, I must say I ventured out into the night on Saturday night. You'd be mad to stay at home, really, staying indoors, because there was just so much going on. It was so much fun. Everywhere we went, there was good banter between the two sets of fans. And that, you know, sometimes, that doesn't happen with New Zealand fans. They tend to get a little bit stroppy, I think, sometimes. Mm. You know, like we saw it in Cardiff after they got beaten by France. They didn't react very well to it at all. And then sometimes in Australia, you know, they lose to the Wallabies. They don't react all that well, and there are recriminations and maybe some not very nice behaviour by some of the fans. I didn't see any of that. I think it's a tribute to the atmosphere that was created by the hometown support.
So listen, it's off to Italy next week before I let you finish, and it's Aviva Stadium in 2 weeks' time for another arm wrestle.
Yeah, you're shouting too.
I will be.
Yeah. I look forward to it. I might let it out of the bag. Michael and I tried the big specialty, one of the specialties here in Chicago, which is this deep dish pizza. And I didn't need to eat for about 24 hours after that, mate. That was something else. But what a great week it's been. And it's been lovely sharing it with you, mate.
Likewise. I mean, we were closet baseball fans during the course of the week, weren't we?
Yeah,
in fairness,
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, and you know, it's just, in a way, it's a shame that one of those games wasn't here. I've got to say, I went to the ice hockey the night after we got here to watch the Blackhawks. Half the people there were watching the baseball on their mobile phones, but gosh, they do it well here. The sport, the stadium experience, it's something quite extraordinary. This is a great city. I suppose it must be all that Irish blood here.
Belfast City Hall was the venue midweek for the pool draw for the Women's Rugby World Cup 2017, which takes place in August. Ireland have been drawn in a pool alongside France, Australia and the winners of the round robin tournament. Shortly we'll be hearing from the World Rugby CEO Brett Gosper, but initially the England Rugby World Cup winner Maggie Alafonso.
With Maggie Alafonso here in Belfast, the draw for the Women's Rugby World Cup 2017 made. On stage you were described as a World Cup winner. It's amazing how time flies.
Oh, it does. You know, 3 years ago is when we won that World Cup in 2014, and I feel like it's only yesterday. But now I've kind of been forgotten, and the new generation are coming to the forefront, which is good because it shows you how much the game has grown, and the excitement in the women's game is growing also.
You certainly won't be forgotten, but even when you reflect back on, you know, those magical couple of weeks in Paris and the environs.
Yeah, I mean, I look back in 2014 and the whole tournament itself was fantastic. It raised the profile of the game. You know, we had huge fan support, crowd support. They all came to watch the women's game, and then, you know, to see us win it in the end was the ending I wanted anyway for myself and my team. But when you think now where the game can go in 2017 and the fan support that we're going to have here over in Ireland, I'm excited to see where the game as a whole is going to develop, and the interest for it is going to also hopefully grow in with that.
You've mentioned the fan support. I mean, if I can take it back to France, even to that semi-final night, yeah. The doubleheader, I mean, the crowds of people who were in for those two games.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. You know, the fans followed France, and it was superb to see France versus Canada.
Canada. Oh,
sorry,
yeah.
I was thinking of a wonderful try.
Megalie Harvey's try, I was thinking.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, when you think about how impressive those teams were during the semi-final, so obviously England played against Ireland and then France played against Canada, but then to see the crowd that came out for that France versus Canada game especially was very, very overwhelming, if I'm honest. I knew people liked rugby in France, but they came out in their full loads really to watch France play, and to think that they lost as well, which makes you think how France are going to be coming into this World Cup. They're going to feel like there's an opportunity for them to hopefully turn the tables around again.
Now, I know the World Cup here in Ireland is 9 months away, but it's a kind of double centre thing, Dublin and Belfast. But if the enthusiasm here in Belfast is anything to go by this morning, we're in for a hell of a competition.
Oh, most definitely. It's been great to see today when, you know, pulling out those balls for the pool draw, and to see the amount of people that are here, to see the kids that are enthusiastic about this tournament is great. But then I just to think when the tournament actually happens, how much more of an interest is going to be. You know, think about this November period. The Ireland team have some really exciting autumn internationals, which is going to hopefully again raise that profile of the women's game. You know, they're playing against Canada, they're playing against England and New Zealand, you know, and then we're going to see New Zealand versus Canada over here as well. So there's some real element of excitement brewing, which is only going to help the interest of the game and the tournament as we progress on over these next few months.
And Ireland started their campaign against England on Sunday in UCD in Dublin. I mean, Ireland and England in any competition could be speed spelling. I mean, there's always an edge to it, isn't there?
Oh, there always is. It's that rivalry between the home nations. To see England versus Ireland, and we play each other many times in the Six Nations, so both teams know each other very well, which is why every time England versus Ireland appears, you know it's going to be an interesting fixture. But I think for Ireland, this opportunity to start off their build up to the World Cup, and for England, it'll be their second game as they play France prior to that. So it's going to be an interesting battle, that game, because these autumn internationals will allow us to see what the top five best teams in the world are currently doing and where they're currently at with only a few months to go.
How would you see where the game is from an English point of view right now? I mean, I know certainly I'm on the hit list in terms of media stuff that comes out, and it really impresses me to see so many players who are contracted now by the Rugby Football Union.
Oh, the women's game has grown hugely. You know, think about over in England especially, they've got a new identity now. They're called the Red Roses. They've got professional contracts which have been provided, which they were all take on that role as of the beginning of the new year, and then there's so much excitement building leading up to this tournament, which just shows you that now many women and girls can look at this sport and say, I can do it as a job, and that they're given the same level of respect as you might get with the men's game. So it's brilliant, and actually now most nations are going to be able to really put on a performance as a professional athlete. You know, it's not professional across all other nations, but this is only going to give momentum that other nations will start to follow.
Before we finish up, you're here as somebody who is helping with the draw. I assume you'll be you do a lot of ambassadorial work in terms of promoting the women's game. I mean, on a day like today, surely this must be a day where you miss it.
Oh, do you know, I have to admit, I was watching those montages and my legs were quivering because I wanted to get out there and have a little run around. And I have to admit, watching the World Cup again and clips from it really brings home how much I love the game, how much I miss the game. But at the same time, I'm happy to sit back now, observe it, and just let the game continue to grow, because there's some fantastic role models who are coming into the sport who are taking the game to another level, and it's pleasing to see.
Well, I'm with Brett Gosper. Brett, we're standing here in Belfast, a draw made just for the Women's Rugby World Cup. I know there's a hell of a lot of planning and preparation gone into it, but it's just really, when you see the draw being made and who's playing who, it kind of brings it home that it's kind of going to come around pretty quickly.
Yeah, it'll come very quickly now. It's in the summer, and it was a fantastic tournament last time. It's incredible that it's gone so quickly, and we're back 4 years later. I think in Ireland there'll be great crowds, great atmosphere. Their home team is obviously a chance to do very well in it. So I think everything's set. You know, it's right across, you know, both sides of the border, which is fantastic, great cooperation, and we're very excited by it.
How do you see this competition getting bigger and better, because it was a tremendous success last time around?
Well, I think what's important is that there is that atmosphere, that we see full stadium. We got that a little bit by surprise in France. I think it starts off, you know, with the lower numbers, and then it builds up towards the finals. And so it always helps when the home side does well. So we always get punished for saying this, but we like to see the home side do well in the tournaments where the host side does do well. And that can guarantee some very, very big audiences. On television, you know, we were punching in the above 2 million in France alone for the television audiences over there. So we could see that again.
And you're happy that the women's game right throughout the world has gone from strength to strength?
We are. And, you know, the number of players in the world has doubled since 2009, when we were named into the Olympics. And the Olympic is having that effect, both on women's sport and the men's sport. But probably it's having greater velocity in the women's area. So the women's game couldn't be stronger than it is right now. But it'll only get stronger.
Just away from that for a second, I know there's a lot of chat about rugby calendars and things, and maybe aligning two different hemispheres. How near is it, but how is that progressing?
Yeah, some good constructive conversations going on, and we're confident that we'll get to an outcome. I can't give you a deadline on that. You know, we'd like to get things done by early next year at least, because there's obviously some broadcast certainties that are needed beyond that in the next cycle and so on. But good constructive conversations happening in the north, in the south, with the clubs, with the unions and so on, and we're hopeful we'll get to a good place.
I suppose the art of any negotiation is a compromise, isn't it? I mean, everybody has their position here, but people do have to move. That's the reality.
Yeah, I think there has to be some compromise. Not everyone will get their perfect calendar, and that's just the way it is. But there's some good leadership being provided by President Bill Beaumont as well as Gus Pichon, and there's an energy behind getting a result there, and hopefully we'll get one.
And while I have you, the eligibility thing is something that's been chatted about. I guess the fact that people are having a conversation about it means that they have to have an opinion.
Yeah, it's good to take a look at these things. You know, it's always a complex subject, that one, yeah. So we're going to look at it in a holistic way, all elements of it, and see what the appetite and desire is, if there is, for any change there.
And just before we finish, we're here in Belfast. You know, even the enthusiasm at which the draw was made this morning tells you a lot of people can't wait for this to happen.
Oh, you can see that. I mean, this is Belfast City Hall's magnificent, and actually the whole scale of the whole operation looks wonderful. So it's obviously been embraced by the city here, and that's the best first step to being a very successful tournament.
Ireland's opening game of the Guinness Series takes place at Aviva Stadium on Saturday. when Canada provide the opposition. Kickoff there is at 7:15. Head coach Joe Schmidt naming a completely new starting 15, including three new caps and potentially another five new caps from the bench. So, how easy was it to return to normality this week, given the seismic win in Chicago last weekend?
It wasn't too difficult to contain the excitement on Tuesday because everyone was pretty fatigued, to be honest, including the coaching staff. So everyone was a little bit flat, and it's always hard to spark yourself up when you haven't really slept too well and you've travelled a long way, and the time difference, while not huge, 6 hours and then down to 5 hours because daylight saving changed the day before we left, or the day that we left. And the fatigue of a test match of that nature where, you know, the ball was in play for long periods and it was warm and, you know, the ground was dry and things happened pretty quickly. And it was physical. So, you know, I think at the start of the week it was a little bit flat, but the enthusiasm really kicked up today and, you know, hopefully that bodes well for the weekend.
And given the fact that there are so many changes, you've got a lot of experience, a lot of, you know, people come in for first starts. In terms of review from last week, I mean, you can't really lay down the law to fellas at the start of the week because, you know, they obviously weren't on the pitch last weekend.
No.
Or can you?
No. Well, we said the first test of the series is going to be a reference point and we want to be able to try to progress from there. And we've certainly made that difficult for ourselves. But at the same time, we haven't referred back to it too much. We've had a look at the Canadians and we've tried to really focus on ourselves because in all honesty, we trained on Tuesday and we trained this morning. We'll have a captain's run tomorrow and we'll play the game. So that's it for preparation. So we can't really look back for too much because we've got to quickly get organised to look forward.
And in terms of the challenge you can expect against Canada this weekend?
Yeah, I think there's a real mix of threats that they have. You know, they've got some really robust lads that carry the ball well, Barkwell, the hooker, and Aaron Carpenter, the eight, and Olmstead, the one of the second rows, tends to carry a fair bit for them. They've got some very strong, robust carriers in the backs. Connor Braid played for Glasgow Warriors a bit. He might even move into 10, but if not, he potentially at 12 with Blevins, who's again very robust and direct, and Kieran Hearn, who played against us at the World Cup, plays for London Irish and is, yeah, he must be 6'2", 6'3". He's a big, tall man, and therefore he's very difficult to contain. The two wingers are really impressive. Taylor Paris, I've seen him playing in France over a period of years, and he's incredibly quick. And DTH van der Merwe, I think we all know how much angst he's caused us when he was playing for Glasgow and now for Scarlets. So he's a class player, as is Evans at fullback. So, I think across the park, they will be very competitive. And, you know, I know Mark Anscombe pretty well, and he'll make sure that they're pretty combative.
And considering there are so many changes, I mean, look at the experience that you have, just three new caps in the starting team. But, you know, those three players are surrounded by fellas who've got varying degrees of experience at international level.
Yeah, I think, you go to the front row with Kean Healy and Sean Cronin. That's a really good foil for Finlay Beelam because, you know, those two guys have got over 50 caps each. You go to the second row and Alton now is starting to get toward 10 caps. He's working his way into double figures while Billy Holland is first up, but he's been around the traps for long enough to know that he can nail on what needs to be done. And Sean O'Brien and Peter O'Mahony don't need too much of a mention, and that's a great foil for Jack O'Donoghue at number eight because he's obviously going to get an opportunity to get a bit of guidance from those guys during the match. And it's a little bit the same in the back line as well. Gary Ringrose playing inside Keith Earls, who's got huge experience, and outside Luke Marshall, who went really well at 12 for us in the first test in Cape Town. So, you know, there is a little bit of a mix. It's probably a little bit more of a mix than we'd first intended. We probably would have kept a little bit more continuity, but it was really the fatigue factor. Guys were pretty flat and weren't sleeping, and we just kind of felt that it was probably better not to force them on through.
And potentially a possibility of another five new caps off the bench, but there are players who've been playing superbly well for their provinces so far this year.
Yeah, again, you know, a guy like Luke Marshall or Nii Arialukum, I thought Nii was really good last year, and he's continued that form this year. Luke, I think his kicking game has really improved. I think his passing is sharper and more consistent, and he's always been really really effective as a running player and as a defender. And you know, he'll add value off the bench. And then a guy like John Ryan has gone incredibly well in the front row for months of this year. So, you know, we're excited to see how he goes. James Tracy, again, we felt he put in a really strong performance against Montpellier, and he's in a very competitive position in Leinster, and he's getting game time and he's getting big starts. So if he's forcing his way in there, then he's doing pretty well. And you know, it was a tight battle with guys like Scannell and Rob Herring in other provinces. Dave Heffernan as well, who's going well. So that's a position where, you know, James is probably conscious that he's got first shot at it, and he'll want to make every post a winner. And you know, I think Dan Levy has been outstanding for Leinster. He's got a versatility to play across the back row, and again for Dan, that's a huge opportunity.
Now, last week was billed as a home away from home in Chicago. I mean, over maybe 50,000 Irish people in Soldier Field. The fact that you're at your real home this weekend, and it's close to being a sellout. I mean, that, you know, the importance of the home crowd and the part that they can play on Saturday.
They certainly played a part in the last 5 or 6 minutes. But it's funny, I was listening to the commentary and listening to the noise while I was going through the footage of the game, and there was a fairly loud All Black contingent there as well. They were certainly cheering a fair bit during that period where New Zealand really came back into the game. But I think the most noise was certainly made by the Irish crew, especially when Robbie Henshaw got the try. And I think at that stage everybody felt that, barring an absolute nightmare, it was almost impossible for the All Blacks to get back and get enough points in such a short amount of time. Coming back into the Aviva, it's a great place to play. The people do really get behind you. It's not just that the people are there, but the people are vocal. And you know, it's certainly not something we take for granted, because we challenge the players to reciprocate that enthusiasm by showing how enthusiastic and committed they are on the pitch. You know, I think if they can reciprocate the enthusiasm of the crowd, and it almost becomes an upward spiral. So, you know, we'd be hopeful that that's what's evident on Saturday.
And just a final word about the players who were not involved this week, those who were involved in Chicago last weekend. How are they? How are they pulling up? What's the story with Johnny Sexton? I also see Ian Henderson has been around camp this week.
Yeah, Ian's been with us the whole time and has been able to do most things. We're just worried about any contact. And it's very hard when he's training to keep him out of contact. He keeps you looking for it. I think he's so used to being a big, strong lad that he bullies people a bit. But no, it's been great to have him in the group, and the rest of the group. They train with real enthusiasm today, and that they'll probably do a bit of strength and conditioning tomorrow, and then we'll give them a weekend off, and hopefully they'll come into the New Zealand week nice and fresh, and they'll be hoping that they get to the forefront of selection. And there's a few guys playing on Saturday that hope that they'll get to the forefront of it.
Ireland head coach Joe Schmidt there. Well, Ireland against Canada is live on RTE Radio this Saturday. It's also live on RTE 2 television. That's it from the Breakdown for this week. You can catch us on Twitter at BreakdownRTE. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening.